Welcome to another exciting episode of Launch, where we talk to entrepreneurs, innovators, inventors about their journey. This is Ron Reardon. My co-host Jim DeBetta is on a speaking engagement, and we're here with our producer, Lee Cantor. Hey.
Yes, you're slumming with me today, Ron. Sorry about that.
I don't know about slumming. You know, I actually feel honored to be here with a tycoon in the Atlanta Radio X industry.
Let's not get carried away.
Okay.
Because we are talking about that topic today, about kind of people who talk a little bit too much that may not be truthful.
That's right. Yeah, it's better to be humble than to overstate your position, right?
Exactly.
That's because I always tell people that I'm a legend in my own mind.
You know? At least you're a legend somewhere.
That's right.
Some people don't even have that.
That's kind of like the farmer that's outstanding in his field.
What? He's outstanding in his field?
That's kind of a double meaning.
That sounds like an Alabama joke.
It's actually a Tennessee joke, but we won't go there. But anyway, today we're going to be talking about how to avoid scam artists, you know.
Yeah, that's big in this industry.
Yeah, especially when you look at the inventor industry, there's lots of this going on. I mean, what I was told, you know, when I first got into this industry is if you see it on TV, don't go there, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's inventor thing or any product that you see on TV?
No, it's just that folks that say that they can help inventors get their product in the market.
Right.
Yeah, you know, just to be cautious, you know, the folks on television. And that's not necessarily true, but it is, you kind of wonder where they get the money to afford all the ads.
Yeah. Do you know how that works?
From what I've seen, you know, with Federal Trade Commission's lawsuits against particular companies is, you know, they estimate that this particular company that they settled with made $20 million a year, you know, from inventors, and that money didn't come from licensing the inventor's idea, but basically from money that the inventors paid them to evaluate the
That's one way.
Yeah, so you know it's a huge industry,
right?
Marketing submission kind of companies, and so you have to be really really cautious about, you know, what's their success rate. And there was a 1999 law that was passed, the Inventor Protection Act, where these companies are supposed to put on their website what their success rate is of how many you know, people that they do business with.
Wow.
and how many of those actually make more money than they pay to get the invention.
And they have that?
Yeah.
You can go on their website and see that?
Yeah. Sometimes it's buried, but it's always on there somewhere, okay? That supposedly it needs to be covered, you know, when they're getting ready to sign the contract and everything.
Oh, wow. They have to reveal that. That's like in franchising. They have to let you contact all of the franchisees. If you're going to buy a franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, I met a fellow once I was trying to remember the name of the franchise, but I think it was called Fancy Food, that he had actually, you know, contacted a fellow that had a franchise that he was thinking about getting involved in, and he actually went and worked with that franchise. You know, it was one of those things of they got started at something like 4 in the morning, and they, you know, cooked up all the food.
Right.
And their whole model was that they produced box lunches for pharmaceutical reps to take to doctors, so that the pharmaceutical rep, in order to get time with the doctor in the office,
right,
would provide lunch for the entire
staff,
right, and then, you know, pitch their whatever drugs they wanted them to be recommending.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, it was very smart.
You can't do that anymore, though. They changed that rule.
Yeah, that's true. This was back in 2002.
Right.
But I thought, you know, what a tremendous industry, but, you know, who wants to get up at 4 in the morning cooking food? But this guy was really enthused about it, and he had worked there for something like 6 months and was going to get his own franchise.
Wow, good stuff.
That's right. But, yeah, it's important if you're going to get a franchise to go check
it
out.
Do your due diligence. Same thing with inventors.
That's true. They need to really check things out. So we've got a long laundry list here of things that people need to check out.
You know? And these are kind of red flags for the inventor, like, if you're dealing with a company that may be not reputable.
That's right. I mean, if you remember Lost in Space, you know, you had the robot that was so saying, warning, warning.
Warning,
okay.
Right.
That's
what was it? Warning Will Rogers?
Yeah, warning Will Rogers. That's right. So that's one of the things that people should, these red flags, you know, should be just that, a red flag that says, you know. And I think the very first one is that if the company is applying pressure for you to send money immediately, okay, that should be a red flag.
So they care more about your money than, right, your invention?
Yeah, it's because I read an article in the Wall Street Journal many, many years ago where they actually did a sting operation on one of these companies.
Oh, really?
And they sat around and they said, what's the most ridiculous invention that we can think of?
Right.
And they decided it was a cell phone hat.
A cell phone hat.
A hat that had a little pocket where you could put your cell phone in the hat.
Right.
They said nobody would ever buy that. So they went to one of these companies and presented it to them, and the salesman's like, this is the best.
We love it.
Oh, this is great. This is
brilliant.
You know how many people buy hats? How many people
hats,
buy
cell phones? Together?
Gazillion. Right. And anyway, they went through the whole thing. And
that's hilarious.
At the end of the article, of course, they end up firing the salesman. But two of the principals in that business end up doing jail time and paying fines and everything.
So how much money were they trying to get? Is it thousands of dollars?
Oh, normally it's a progressive thing of they'll do something for free, and then they want a little bit of money, and then
if we did this, then you really have a shot.
Yeah,
and they just build it up.
Yeah, and they usually produce a marketing report that has basically just publicly available information in it, but it looks glossy, like. You know, the population in the United States is X millions, and this percentage of the folks, drink water.
Water. Breathe in and out. So then if you get only 1% of that, you'll be a millionaire.
Yeah, and, that 1% trap, you really need to watch out for, because I've heard that not only with pitches to inventors, but a lot of times entrepreneurs, when they're pitching to investors, we'll say if we can only get 1% of the market, this will, and that's a red flag to an investor, is if somebody has the hockey stick chart that shows all the growth, and they're saying we're capturing 1% of the market, that's usually an immediate turnoff for an investor.
Yeah, 1% is a big number.
It really is. And when you think about what...
Sounds small.
I know.
But it's big.
That's right. But anyway, another red flag is if the company refuses to provide in writing the number of ideas that they've represented and how many inventors have made more money than they've invested. Because that's a requirement by law.
Right.
And if they refuse to put that in writing, that should be a red flag.
Now, when you're saying put it in writing, do they have to say that 7 out of 10 of the people we worked with were successful, or do they have to list those 7 and list the 3 that weren't?
Well, we'll get to that in just a second. But generally, they'll say, "Okay, in 2009, we accepted 6,243 submissions,
right?
And of those, 43 made more money than what they spent with us,
right?
And they have to show this is what our numbers were.
But do they have to identify those 43 so you can contact them?
That's one of the red flags is if they refuse, they won't send you every single one of the successful folks, but they should be able to send you the contact information in your area of 3 folks that are happy with their service. Mm-hmm. And of course they're not going to send you 3 folks that are just unhappy.
Right.
They're going to send you 3 that their product actually made it.
Right.
And a lot of times if you look at their advertising or their website, the successes that they do have. They will have those listed. Okay, just the thing that you have to be careful with is to assume that your idea is going to be just as successful as the one that made it.
Yeah, they like that one big success story. They like to bring out and around to show everybody.
That's right.
They're real proud of that.
Yeah, because if you look at the numbers, it's something like 0.03% or something like that of the success rate. With these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that number and you say, that's kind of small, because, whatever the number is, whether it's, less than 10% or whatever, I think inventors have to realize that inventing is a risky business, okay? The odds are really against an individual.
Sure.
I saw some statistics years ago that 3M had something like a 35% success rate with the products they bring out. Now, you think about that. This is 3M. They know what they're doing.
Exactly.
Okay. And if 65% of their products that come out fall just flat as a flitter, okay?
Right.
And with all the marketing power and manufacturing capacity they've got and distribution, it's really tough for an individual inventor to get out there. The numbers I've heard is that an individual inventor has about a 1 in 300 chance of their product being successful.
Yeah, that's a scary number.
Yeah, so when you think about 300 folks start the journey, and one of them make it, and 299 fall by the wayside.
Right.
You need to consider that when you hear complaints against companies that do advertise on TV that, yeah, I went to this company and I spent all this money and I didn't get anything. Well, it might be that you had an ugly baby, okay? Okay, it's not necessarily that the company did a bad job.
Right.
Okay, it's just that this is a tough industry. I mean,
right.
When you go to the stores and you see all the stuff that's there, it's kind of like when I go into the bookstore and I'm looking at all these books, I'm like, who reads these things? Okay, I mean, you've got the blockbuster, books that
right.
that everybody buys, okay? But then you have all these other thousands of authors, and I don't know what the statistics are, in the book industry, but I bet there's a lot of books that just don't sell well.
Yeah, the vast majority, I'm sure. Yeah. And they don't need a big number to break even, I guess, in books as they would like an invention.
That's true. I think it's probably the investment's a lot less in a book than it would be an invention.
Right.
Because, I mean, you don't need a prototype of a book.
You already know what a book is.
That's right. That's right.
And they have the distribution already. They can throw it out in the bookstores. A lot of the publishers have relationships.
Right.
So the inventor's battling a little steeper hill there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember reading one book that the fellow was talked about an idea he had as far as reusing old tires, okay?
Right.
And it was a wonderful idea. I think that they were going to use the tires to kind of hold steel pipes together or something like
uh-huh.
that. You know, because the old tire would, even though it couldn't be used on the road, it would still work real well for holding these pipes together.
Sure.
And it was a tremendous idea, a great invention. His problem was, do you know where all these old tires are?
Where?
What they're in, these different spots way out in the country, okay? There's no real good distribution system for
right.
these tires. So it's like, how am I going to contact all of these, Billy Bobs that have got,
right.
all
piles
these
of
piles
tires.
Of tires right. in order to get the tires to where they need to be to hold these pipes together?
Right.
And so, the business failed, not because it was a bad idea, but it's just like, you can't get there from here.
Right.
Okay.
That's funny that it's, you don't know what you don't know until you're halfway in it.
That's right. Yeah, so it was a good idea. The invention worked. The economics were great. It's just the distribution was just absolutely lousy.
Right. So there's a lot of variables in there.
Quite a few.
And these scam people, I think, prey upon that because there's so many moving parts.
Right.
Then they make it seem like it's overwhelming for the inventor, so it's difficult for them to grasp all the stuff. So is that part of their sales technique where they just overwhelm them with information where the inventor's like, well, that's too much. I'll just pay you. It'll be easier to do that.
Yeah, because, there are certain inventors that want to do everything themselves.
Right.
But then there's other inventors, it's like you just said, it's like, oh, my goodness, this is complicated. And so they want the convenience of a one-stop shop, of a place
right.
that says, we'll guide you through this, we'll do everything.
Right.
I think the key there is it's one thing to listen to the salesman, and it's my understanding that they do to police the salesman, and if they overreach, those salesmen are, hit the road, they're gone.
Right.
But I think it's really important that when you get a contract from any company, that you read it carefully.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
Okay. Because that's the complaint that I've heard from folks in this industry is like, look, we explained this to the people. We told them to read it, then they come back later saying, well, you didn't tell me that, but it's very clearly there
right.
in the
and
contract.
And they signed the document.
And so. They signed it. So before you sign any document, you need to read it carefully, if you want, take it to an attorney and have him look at it.
Right.
Because a lot of times the attorney will be, are you aware that this clause is in here?
Right. And then a lot of times you can get that change, in some respects.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, but there's all kinds of people that are scammers. It's not always these big monster companies, right? Some of these scammers could be smaller in scope, right? Like, what are some of the tips? Like, if you, you contact a company, and maybe the address says Washington, D.C., but every time they send you something, it says, like Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, that's a clue, okay? Because I've heard stories of where that exact same thing happens is it looks like they got a prestigious address, but then when you look at the correspondence, and the postmark, it's coming from, Kalamazoo or whatever.
Right, you're like, why is their website saying they're right next door to the patent agent, or what's it called, the patent
office.
Office.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
then they're like in the middle of the country.
Yeah, because I remember there's one company that I'm familiar with is that when it was researched, it certainly looked like it was right here in the United States. The pictures looked pretty incredible. I mean, they had all these law books in the background, right, and nice, you know, oak desk and all like that, and it looked super legit. And when you checked it out, they were in Indonesia, okay?
They weren't even in this country.
And when you looked at the address that they provided for their United States address, and you Googled it with Google Maps,
right?
It was an open field in Texas.
So that's a good tip, is to Google something in Google Maps to see really what kind of outfit that you're dealing with.
That's correct.
If all of a sudden it zooms down and you're in the middle of some neighborhood and some guy's you see him waving from his backyard, maybe that isn't the right outfit for you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, that is something that happened.
But you expect also when you contact these people to actually reach a human being, right? If you're always going to voicemail or the person's never there and he's always calling you back, it sounds like that's a problem as well.
That's true. Yeah, because, if somebody, a real human being, answers the phone,
right,
that should, improve your comfort factor. But, yeah, if it always goes to voicemail and then
right,
you get a call back.
That's a good tip if... to know if the person you're dating's married. That's another.
Yeah, I think it was a movie here recently where the little bit of the snippet that I saw of the movie, the wife is saying, "Why are you taking your cell phone to the bathroom?" That should be a clue.
Right,
okay?
Exactly. Always voicemail, call back, something suspicious. Nothing good's happening when that's the case.
Yeah, that's true. And another thing that you need to watch out for is if they tell you to fully describe your idea in writing and then mail it to yourself and not open the envelope, that should be a real red flag. This is known.
Mail it to yourself? What is that to?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yeah,
except you get mail.
It's a persistent urban legend called the poor man's patent, okay, that if you write your idea down, tape it up and everything and mail it to yourself and then don't open it up, that somehow or another, if it ever gets in the court of law, you can open
just
it up in front of the judge
and
say, this is what
this
I
proves
invented.
It.
Yeah. And the courts and the patent office, neither one will accept this sealed letter as proof of data conception.
Okay? Really? So that's a total urban myth?
A total urban myth, yeah. I mean,
how did it get started? What did it ever work?
No, it's never worked.
It's never worked.
It's never, ever worked. It's one of those things that's just really, persistent out there
very dramatic. And the whole everybody's gathered in the courtroom and then you got your thing and you're going to rip it open, like this is the winner of the Academy Awards Best Picture.
That's right.
And then you go, aha, see that? I thought of this snuggie right before everybody. Says so right here.
That's right.
Oh, you win, sir. Here's your check. They have to give you millions of dollars.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that way.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the United States is the only country that is first to invent versus first to file.
But are there any countries does that work?
No country does this work.
So it's a total lie.
Yeah, I mean, you can have an inventor's journal that's bound like a book and written in ink and the pages numbered and signed and witnessed, that to prove when you thought of the idea and how you progressively continue to work
right,
on it.
Right, but mailing it to yourself has nothing to do
with it.
Mailing
to yourself does not work. And, of course, the ironclad thing is that you actually file, a patent application. That at least shows that at the date of filing that you had command of the invention.
Right.
Okay.
So that's worth something.
That's worth something, yeah.
And how much does that cost just to file, to send something in?
Well, if you file a provisional patent application, the filing fee with the patent office is $110. The key thing is you got to be very, very careful with a provisional application. It's been stated that a patent is the most complex legal document on the planet.
Right. Okay?
And so the fact that you're going to be writing it yourself is kind of like performing your own surgery.
But you can't just do something and just throw it in there, pay the $100 and just say, look, I thought of this. That doesn't really help you either.
You need to have enough detail in there that somebody in that particular industry mm-hmm. could look at what you've written and say, I can make that and use it. Okay.
Right.
And so it can't be just like.
It can't be like. I have an idea.
The example I use is if you wrote down, here's a method for turning lead into gold.
Right.
And you say, the method is as follows. You take a bar of lead, you put it in a bowl. you do some chemistry stuff, and you remove the bar of gold.
And then it's gold, right?
And, you know, the patent office is going to be, we need some more detail on this, do some chemistry stuff, okay?
Right. You got to break it down a little bit
so
more.
So that's, you know, it's got to be step by step that you would use this chemical.
So there's no
heat.
Cheap way of doing this. There's nothing on the fly like this. It seems like the mail it to yourself. Someone's trying to do like kind of a cheap way of doing this to protect yourself. So there's no real way to protect yourself without spending a little bit of money.
Yeah, you mean you need to go to a patent agent or attorney,
right,
and have them, you know, have dialogue with them so that there's enough information extracted from the inventor,
right,
that it meets the requirements of patent law, that it's enabled, and you know, that there's enough detail there that it could be
right,
made and used. Because just writing down things in generalities
right,
is not going
like
to give enough.
Better mousetrap, that's not enough.
No. You're going to have to talk about exactly how
it works.
Would this mousetrap
right,
work? Okay. And I won't get into mousetrap patents because that's another story. That's for sure. But yeah, if you know, we talked about, you know, if the company claims to be in one state but they're in another, that should be a red flag. The other is, you know, if the company recommends that you get a design patent, okay, on what you've got.
Is that different than what are the different kinds of patents?
Well, there's a utility patent on how something functions and a design patent on how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
And design patents have their place. Okay, all the Star Wars toys got design patents. If you remember the Furby from many years ago,
right?
The Transformers, you know, things like that. The Furby got both a design patent and a utility.
Mm-hmm.
Design patent on how it looked, utility patent on how it
operated,
the animatronics. And the first Transformer had a utility patent, but all the Transformer patents after that had design patents, you know,
right,
Maximus Prime, like that. But if they just recommend a design patent off the bat, that's a clue that this could be a scam, okay? Because in general, utility patents have a lot more value if the claims are allowed, okay? And a design patent is just, hey, it looks like this. And if that's important, like the Furby, okay, or a Transformer,
right,
or a Star Wars toy, then that's good.
Sure.
But if what you've got is something that's got functionality and you're just getting a design patent, then it's pretty much worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody could make your device that functions the same but looks different.
Right.
And you've got no recourse, you know, to go sue them.
Yeah.
So that's... in the past, a lot of companies...
Is that easier to do, a design one? Like, that's less complex, right? Because you don't need the engineering element of this. You just need the superficial, how it looks part.
Yeah, the patent office rule on design patents is you can only have one claim. And in layman terms, the claim says, hey, it looks like this.
Right.
It's something like the ornamental appearance of a blah, blah, blah,
right,
as shown and described. And so what you really pay for in a utility patent are the claims. Of them, the patent agent or attorney knowing what has been done before and crafting the claim so that you get the broadest coverage possible in consideration of the prior patents that have already been done.
Right.
But yeah, like I said, design patents are very, very useful in their place. But if all the company does is design patents when you really need a utility, then that's a clue.
Yeah, that sounds like they're trying to work around the edges instead of really address the issues.
Yeah, and the other thing that I've seen here recently is that a utility patent was granted, but the claim was so long and so detailed as to be totally worthless and very easy for a company to design around. So if you see, you know, if the patent was immediately allowed,
right,
that should be a warning sign. That means that the claim was so detailed and so worthless in the marketplace that the patent office looked at it and just said, yeah, you can have this. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but...
knock yourself out.
Yeah, because, you know, the patent office doesn't make any consideration on marketability.
Right, that's not their place.
No, that's the marketplace does
right,
that. They simply says, you know, according to patent law and what's been done before, yes, you can have a patent, or, you know, no, you can't, okay? But, I've seen one patent here recently that was so detailed that it was worthless. So, you know, when the
you can overdo it in that respect too.
Yeah. When the inventor got the patent, they were happy, and then they showed the patent to somebody that was knowledgeable, and they're like, nobody's going to license this. Okay, it's worthless.
Because like one minor change isn't that's not what that patent's about, right?
That's correct. You know, for an infringing product to infringe, It has to have every single element that's in the claim, that you've got to prohibit others from making, using, selling.
So that's where the art of this is, right? Where you want to say a lot, but you don't want to say too much, but you want to protect yourself, right. But you want to leave it open so that there's room in there.
That's true. Yeah. Writing claims is an art and a science.
Right. Okay?
It really is, in order to get the greatest protection possible. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if the company recommends that you submit your idea to manufacturers without applying for a patent first, that should be a red flag, okay? Because most of the manufacturers out there are either going to want an issued patent, or they're going to want a published patent application, or they're going to at least want to know that you've got patent pending, you've got an application into the patent office.
Because they might be afraid that you're stealing someone else's idea?
Well, it's just that if you send a unsolicited invention, you know, to a company, and it's not patent pending, that's not good, because the company can just say, what a great idea.
Yeah, and wish we thought of that. Oh, wait, we can say we thought of that.
Yeah, it's like you have no patent pending, you have no published
right.
patent application, you got no issued patent.
Right. But some companies won't even look at that, right? They won't, because they don't even want to get into the mess of, well, I had it first, and then only, because I know like in the movie screenplay world,
right?
You know, you can imagine that the people who produce movies get bombarded with ideas, and I had that idea,
right.
And they won't even look at unsolicited scripts,
right?
Like
yeah.
It has to come through an agent, it has to come through certain channels in order for it to be looked at.
Yeah. It all depends on the company. Some companies are just like, we don't accept any submissions. Period. Go away.
Right.
If it's not invented here. There are others that are starting to embrace what they call open innovation, saying,
right.
We need ideas. But still, you know, they'll accept an idea, but the first thing that they do is they send you something for you to sign that basically says, you know, if we've already working on this, too bad, so sad.
Right. And that we're going to have rights to this.
Right. Yeah. So, for inventors, one of the best things that an inventor can do is there are now what they call product hunts coming from different companies,
uh-huh.
saying, okay, we need a new pet toy.
Right.
We're looking for a new pet toy. If you've got an idea for a new pet toy, send it in to us. We'll evaluate it.
Right.
Can't promise you that we'll take
right,
it.
Right, but you have to give up some rights, but then there's a chance you can win a prize or something, or you can win something.
It all varies by the company mm-hmm. because, some companies are totally contingency. You know, you have to pay them to evaluate your idea.
Right.
And if they like it, they'll say, okay, you're not going to spend any more money. We'll put up all the money. We'll get it made.
So that's
we'll
real?
There's companies.
There
are companies like that.
Really?
Legitimate companies. You do pay them to evaluate it, and they do reject most of them.
Okay? Right. So you pay them, and then it could be rejected?
Yeah, but it's a reasonable fee that you're paying them. Okay?
Right.
I mean, it's under $1,000. But if they take it, they're like, okay, you're not going to spend another nickel, and then when we start making money, here's how we're going to split it.
Right. Okay? And what's the split usually?
Usually it's 50-50. I mean, but it's like if you get a 5% royalty,
right.
Then when those royalties come in, we get half of the 5%. You get half the 5%.
Wow.
So, you know, it's small, 2.5%. But
you
don't spend any money.
Right.
Other than the evaluation, you're not spending any money.
Where do you find these kind of opportunities?
Well, with the United Inventors Association, there are companies like that
uh-huh.
out there. The one that I'm familiar with is called Lambert & Lambert. They're totally on contingency, and, you know.
That's how they work.
Pay a fee, yeah. And they're looking for the blockbusters, the knock it
right.
out of
the home runs.
Yeah. Now, the key thing, even with that, is the inventor has to, be careful about being greedy, okay?
Oh, because then they'll say, wow, that's a great idea. I want more than that.
Yeah,
and they're like, okay, thanks, bye. Go
yeah,
away.
Yeah, you know, one article I read, from Lambert & Lambert that was in Inventor's Digest is that they secured a licensing deal. The company says, yes, we want to license this, and here's what the royalty rate is.
Right.
And the inventor said, that's not enough. I want more. And they're like,
that's not negotiable, I bet.
No, it wasn't negotiable. And you know, of course, Lambert & Lambert was not happy because basically the whole deal fell through. I mean, they
right.
Everything was looking good. The inventor got too greedy, said, and then everything vaporized.
Wow.
So that's a tip for inventors is be realistic about, what the return can be, in a licensing deal, for your product.
Right.
If you get one, you know, take the money and run. You know?
Exactly.
That's true. But, you know, if the company provides a patent search and they refuse to provide in writing the number of favorable patent searches versus unfavorable, that should be a red flag. You know, if every patent search comes back and says, yes, you can get a patent.
A winner, right.
Give me a break.
That's a problem.
That's just not true, okay?
Right.
Because, you know, I had one inventor call me and says, you know, I just came up with an idea for an electric car jack, okay? And you would plug it into the cigarette lighter. This would be basically for women.
Right.
And you'd put the car jack underneath and, you know, without getting your hands dirty, you know, or anything like that, it would raise the car. And I said, and they said, I want you to do a search. And I'm like,
I don't have to do a search.
I said, my intuition tells me this has been done. Okay.
Right.
I don't know if it's in the marketplace, but I think it's probably already been patented. I said, you know, go to google.com/patents, type in the word electric car jack and call me back.
Right.
5 minutes later, she calls back and she says, you know, you're right. It's already been done. And I was like, keep inventing.
Good try. Try again.
That's right. And, you know, that's a good recommendation for inventors is you can do your own informal patent search. You know, it's not as thorough as a professional one. But if you find your exact invention, you know, doing that, then you've saved yourself a lot of time and money.
Right. Okay? And you can find that in seconds, right?
Yeah. Very, very fast. Like I said, electric car jack. And, you know, if you think that you've invented a better mousetrap, go in there and type in mousetrap.
And be amazed at how many other people.
and wade through about 4,000 patents on mouse traps.
Really?
It's pretty amazing.
4,000? Are mice that big of a problem? Yes, they must be.
Well, I mean, some of the patents I've seen on mouse traps are laughable because, once again, there's a difference between what's allowed by patent law and what succeeds in the marketplace. One that I saw basically had this little teeter-totter bridge that a mouse would have to climb on to get to some cheese. And in the process of going for the cheese, you know, the little bridge would tip. And they would
dump them into something?
And dump them into a bucket of water. Okay? And so that got a patent.
Hey.
It had not been done before. But, you know, I've never seen that on the marketplace. Because,
really?
You know, how many mice do you know are going to climb a little bridge to go for the cheese?
Very active mice.
Something like that. Okay.
That's funny.
And then, you know, I saw one patent on mouse traps that was basically a mouse trap combined with a paper bag. Because, you know, once the mouse got caught and killed, you know, the paper bag was already attached and, you know, you could...
There you go. Just throw it away.
That's right. Just dispose of the mouse.
You're done.
That's right. So anyway, a lot of red flags for inventors. The key thing is, you know, to really check out the company. If you've got a contract that you've got to sign, read it very thoroughly. You know,
and what's that magazine that we were...
This is Inventor's Digest.
And that's highly recommended if you're an inventor, right?
Every inventor, you know, before they start their journey, should be subscribing to Inventor's Digest.
Okay. There's no excuses. What is it, like $30 a year or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
It's very affordable. It's got the best information on the planet.
Right, and it's reputable
current information.
Exactly.
You know, if you're looking for a reputable company... You know, that's a great place to start.
You probably can go to the library and get that, I would imagine.
Yeah, the library has it, newsstands, but the best thing to do is just go online and subscribe to it and get your own personal copy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you just need to be informed. Well, hopefully our listeners out there, you know what all the red flags are. And so this is Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor signing off for launch.